d'un peu spécial, c'est encore là, c'est peut-être du folk. En tout cas, c'est un hommage à Captain Beefheart.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called?
The news brought to you live.
Good evening, and welcome to the Friday edition of CKUT's Community News Program, Off the Hour. Today is June 4th. My name is Brian Jefferson, and I will be your host today. CKUT broadcasts from the unceded traditional territory of the Anishinaabeg and the Kanyenkehaga, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. Stay tuned, we'll be right back with some news. CKUT 90.3 FM.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
First, news. Hundreds gathered Monday at the foot of Montreal to remember 215 children whose remains were recently found buried at a former residential school. The gathering was a drum circle for those lost at the Kamloops School and to honor those who survived. Indigenous speakers say they want national officials to organize digs at former residential schools across the country. Quebec's Minister of Health and Social Services announced this week that the province would start providing second doses of the COVID-19 vaccine. Registrations begin on Monday on the website Click Santé. Minister Christian Dubé had this to say.
Well, I'm doing it backward. I'm saying we want to have all those vaccinated, all those who want to be vaccinated, and we hope that this is 75% of the population, adult population, by age category, by August 31st.
Okay.
And this is a big order.
And Montreal will turn from a red to an orange zone starting next week on June the 7th. And the city's old port started enforcing a new curfew Thursday after thousands of people gathered in the neighborhood to socialize. The curfew is from midnight to 6 a.m. and officials have not given an official timeline for when it will be lifted. Some Montrealers celebrated the end of the citywide curfew at Place Jacques-Cartier on Sunday with parties and fireworks, reportedly leaving trash and eventually erupting into violence. And housing rights groups want to convert part of a Plateau Heritage Center into social housing for the deaf community. The building was formerly a boarding school and is called the Institute for Deaf Mute Girls. This comes during National Accessibility Week, which celebrates contributions of people with disabilities. And in holidays, June is a month of celebration, reflection, and education. It's Pride Month, National Indigenous History Month, and Filipino Heritage Month. You're listening to CKUT on 90.3 FM.
One thing we've all learned from COVID-19 is that something small can spread quickly, like a ripple. If enough of us do our part by getting vaccinated, we can start a wave. A wave of Canadians helping each other return to the people and places we love. We can all help by getting vaccinated. Learn more at canada.ca/COVID vaccine. A message from the Government of Canada.
Welcome back to CKUT's Friday news program, Off the Hour. The time is roughly 5 p.m. My name is Brian Jefferson, and you're listening to Montreal-based artist No Cosmos. This is their track called The Post-Human Shuffle. Up first on this episode, it's reported that the rate of homelessness and the number of tent encampments in Montreal have grown since the start of the pandemic. City officials say that they want these new tents to come down, but residents and their proponents say camps are the best option for shelter. Joel Salmadal has more.
Residents, social activists, and community workers protested against the dismantling of tent encampments around Montreal by city officials. The march and rally through Hochelaga in May followed the recent closure of an encampment near Notre Dame Street.
There's a mix. You have some people who didn't have a choice when they go in the camps, where maybe they got kicked, you know, they lost their apartments, especially with COVID. And there's some people who made that particular choice because of the safety of, instead of maybe shelters. So you're in a cramped space, it's safer. So they're making these choices and you're taking away their agency.
This protester wanted to remain nameless. They held a large banner for the local union, Industrial Workers of the World, who hosted Saturday's march. They also say that the city wasn't doing enough to find effective solutions to some problems that encampments may have.
They'll kind of often make excuses about, oh, well, it's unsafe. And it's like, well, then if you're not technically against people doing this and it's just because it's unsafe, make it safe. Take the steps. Like, get the city together to, oh, well, it's fire hazards. Well, then hand out extinguishers, right? Why aren't you finding solutions to help keep them safe in there and let people do what they want when they're not hurting people, or make it a safer thing instead of just kicking them out?
The city says that tent encampments have been shut down because they pose health and security threats. Melanie Gagne is the city's media relations representative. She says the city doesn't tolerate tent encampments because of the dangers that they create. In a written statement, she says, quote, Les campements organisés ne sont pas permis en raison des enjeux de sécurité, de salubrité et de cohabitation qu'ils représentent, end quote. Which translates to, organized camps are not allowed because of the issues of security, sanitation, and cohabitation that they represent. However, protesters say otherwise, rolling their bicycle along in one hand and holding an IWW sign in the other. This anonymous protester says they aren't convinced it's about security.
And the way the city has been dismantling encampments has no respect for human dignity and for people's rights and agency. And they are using the reason that it's because of like the risk related to fire or any other reason they can find to try to justify it and make it okay, while it's really not okay.
Michel Monette is the director general of Hochelaga-based shelter Care Montreal. He says that shelters have been an important option for many Montrealers who face housing insecurity. But he also says that their role in easing some of these challenges grew during the pandemic as the rate of homelessness in the city rose.
Care Montreal is a shelter, an emergency shelter for a person that experiences homelessness. And we actually help people getting out of the street. And we have several different programs to help them by any kind of work, doing their paperwork, income tax report, medical assistance, or follow up and things like that, and also finding apartments for them and all this.
He says the pandemic has increased homelessness in Montreal because of the loss of work and income.
So what happened with COVID is there is like multiple effect of COVID. One of them is any person that was working on an unstable job, or like, you know, under the table, or black market, whatever, then they lost their job. So lost their revenue, had no social help to come with it and all that. So lost their capacity to pay the rent, so lost their apartments, and then got in the street.
Monette says CARE has tried to adapt as best as possible to the new circumstances, but they still face issues. He says the new public health guidelines in place to contain the spread of the virus impact CARE's capacity to help those who are homeless.
La santé publique, public health, they cut any, comment on appelle ça? Des lits superposés, you know, like a bed that is on top of another bed. The shelters were set up like that. And these beds are no more available in shelters. So that cut like probably around half of the beds in shelters. So that brought these people in the street.
Monette says that the housing prices have been rising in the city for a while now, and this spike in homelessness was foreseeable despite the pandemic.
The rental are very expensive, very, very high, and there is few apartments available with a lot of people that wants it. So that creates an increase of the price and creates also a rarity of apartments. So that also, when you add this to any people that wants to renovate their apartments and leave, or some others that will just try to find new place. So the housing crisis, even if the government is not recognizing it, really exists. It's been 10 years. That we advise that it is there, saying like this is gonna hit, it will be hard, it will be tough.
A protester in an olive green t-shirt and black sweatpants walked with the Hochelaga protest in May. They say the high rent prices leave many in tight situations with few options available for a home.
There's nothing that's really affordable, and the what do you call that, rooming houses, rooming houses, you know, where you can get just a room for about $300, $400 a month, which is affordable when you're on welfare. That's not a goal in life. Nobody just, you know, woke up one day and say, oh, you know what? I'll apply for welfare. Fuck work. Fuck that. No. And there's no in-between anymore. There's barely any affordable housing for as a transition.
Monette says that to begin solving the crisis, the provincial government first needs to accept that it actually exists. He says even before COVID, there were many encampments across the city, and that this number will continue to grow with the housing crisis.
The Quebec government this week said that there is no such a crisis. So if the governments believe that there is no crisis, then they will not act on it. So and then it's been like this for 10 years. So all the governments that came at the end of the province never acknowledged this problem. There is actually more other camps that are building in Montreal, and there will be others. And that's the reality.
Gagné says that the city is doing its best to work with community organizations and shelters to find better solutions for those who are homeless, but that the tent encampments still won't be tolerated. Quote, les campements organisés posent des risques de sécurité importants et ne peuvent pas être tolérés. La ville de Montréal continue de travailler sans relâche pour des solutions pérennes et sécuritaires pour les plus vulnérables. End quote. This translates to, Organized camps pose important security risks and can't be tolerated. The city of Montreal continues to work tirelessly for lasting and secure solutions for the most vulnerable. The city's firmness in its attitudes was also the main problem that some of the protesters had. Some protesters, like Kevin Doiron, say the city should be more humane.
We need cops that come at 6 o'clock in the morning and see someone freezing. Instead of telling them to move, he should come and give him a blanket, a lunch, and coffee, and bring him to a nice place to sleep if he wants to. And the people that don't want to go sleep somewhere and not be a part of this fucked up society system, like, they're allowed to. They're allowed to be here. They was born here. They're allowed to live here.
Doiron says that for some, tenting is an individual choice that residents should be able to make for themselves.
I've been there. I've been on the street. I sleep on a bench. I've been woke by the cops at 6 o'clock in the morning tell me to move instead of ask me if I need a blanket. You know what I mean? They represent the justice. They should represent humanity.
I'm Joel Salmadal.
Time.
C is for...
Cauliflower.
Confusion. Creation.
Pickle. K is for...
Kitten.
Cam.
C, wait. Fianro, C, U, unbearable.
U is for underground.
Oh, yeah.
Umbrella.
T. Trite.
Tremendous.
Torment.
Tire.
C, K.
I can't think of a U one. T.
T.
F is for famous.
Fun. Fumble. M is for... Montreal.
Welcome back to Off the Hour on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Brian Jefferson. For the rest of the hour, we're going to tune into a podcast. Make sure to stick with us till the end of the hour. We'll give you some news that you can use here in Montreal.
This is a piece on border crossings in between southern Quebec and the States. It's from this time 3 years ago, June 2018, and it was made by From Embers.
You are listening to From Embers, a weekly show on CFRC 101.9 FM about anarchist and anti-authoritarian ideas and practice. We are broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples on land that has come to be called Kingston, Ontario, Canada because of the thievery and brutality of the Canadian state and its empire-loving parents. From Embers is about fires, some real and some metaphorical. Fires started generations ago and tended to over the years. Little sparks all across this territory that we hope will grow, spread, and engulf the thieving state called Canada and the capitalist system that has plagued this land since the fur trade.
As anarchists, we are against countries and borders. But what does that even mean? What would it actually look like if people were truly free to move around as they please, and yet not forced to leave their homes because of war, environmental destruction, or poverty? And how would we ever get from here to there? Today on From Embers, we're going to look closely at a few people who have responded to the recent influx of refugees moving north from the United States, especially in southern Quebec. We'll talk about the ways these people are opposing and defying the Canada-US border and offering support to refugees in a political moment when a large number of people are trying, and sometimes failing, to migrate across the imaginary line that separates Justin Trudeau's Canada from Donald Trump's America. I'm going to start us off by reading you a recent call from Solidarity Across Borders, a Montreal-based group that focuses on borders and migrant justice. In the past year, tens of thousands of people have entered Canada from the United States on foot, seeking a safe haven. Every day, more people are arriving. This phenomenon is often referred to Trump, but it must be understood in the global context. Worldwide, more than 21 million people have been forced to leave their homes because of wars, political oppression, military violence, climate change, conditions created by imperialist states like Canada and the United States. Although directly involved in the economic and social devastation throughout the Middle East, Latin America, the Caribbean, Africa, and Asia, the Canadian state presumes to limit who can enter and who can legally stay. Rejecting the racist and Islamophobic mainstream narrative and media coverage around those migrating, Solidarity Across Borders calls for open borders, radical solidarity with and mutual aid among migrants, solidarity cities, an end to deportation, immigration, detention, and double punishment, and an inclusive and ongoing regularization process. Status for all now. Global apartheid. Borders play a crucial role in the capitalist system and its quote-unquote migrant crisis. Canada and the U.S. are founded on the theft of Indigenous lands and the ongoing genocide and displacement of Indigenous peoples. These borders, originally established by colonial wars to benefit European colonizers, are also a means to control migration. They prevent people from leaving violence, poverty, and exploitation, drive families from country to country, force them to board dangerous boats, and make long treks across deserts and snow. Borders push people into precarity without legal status, criminalizing them. Borders keep the global apartheid system in place. No more case by case. Refugees coming from the U.S. to Quebec and Canada have had no choice but to cross irregularly at Roxham Road and other ad hoc points of entry since the Safe Third Country Agreement came into effect in 2004. This agreement between Canada and the USA prevents migrants from making refugee claims at a regular Canadian border post if they come from the United States, and vice versa. This means migrants entering Canada from the US can only make a refugee claim if they first cross irregularly. This policy has already taken the lives of migrants and caused others to lose legal status or be deported. We honor the memory of Mavis Otutaya, who died in June 2017. Those who arrive in Canada are encouraged to put their efforts and hopes into their individual cases, trying to prove that they are real refugees or good immigrants. This lengthy bureaucratic fight is isolating and takes energy away from collective struggle. Moreover, in the last few years, on average, 40% of inland refugee claims were refused. There may be an even higher rate of refusal for people crossing irregularly, because many have little support in making their claims, and because some have been outside their country of citizenship for many years. Soon, many will be refused as refugees and face a choice: stay in Canada without papers, or be deported to their country of citizenship. The Canadian refugee system will thus smoothly deal with the problem outside of the media spotlight, judge people individually, and then, quietly, one by one, deport or criminalize many thousands. Rejecting racist divisions. Mainstream discourse and media coverage feed divisions among social groups who should be allied against the unjust global distribution of wealth and power. At best presenting the issue as humanitarian rather than political, mainstream discourse hides the role that borders play in maintaining that unequal distribution. The way that Canada has contributed to pushing people out of their homes in the first place is never mentioned. The far-right discourses of groups such as La Meute and Storm Alliance are emboldened by the normalization of Islamophobic and racist attitudes by mainstream media, politicians, and the state. By declaring that they are only against illegal immigrants, these far-right groups attempt to convince others that migrants crossing irregularly are criminals. playing into long-held racist and Islamophobic European fears of black and brown men, far-right groups across Europe, the US, Canada, and Quebec spread confusion and fear about an invasion and terrorists and encouraged the state to expand border enforcement and the policing of migrants. In these ways, instead of the conflict being defined by a division between wealthy and powerful and poor and oppressed, both inside and outside Quebec and Canada, it is defined by a division between people inside Quebec or Canada, fighting to keep social programs, but only for us, and people outside or newly arriving, portrayed as competitors for scarce resources, line jumpers, security threats, etc. Call to action. We support the freedom of all migrants to stay, to move, to return. Specifically, we support migrants in the United States, whether they choose to fight to stay in the U.S. or to cross any way they can into Canada. In the face of the case-by-case approach imposed by the state, we must take collective action and support each other. As we oppose anti-migrant propaganda and these fabricated divisions, we must build concrete solidarity. Actions we can take in our communities. Everywhere in Canada. Organize or join mobilizations demanding that Canada ditch its case-by-case approach and instead implement an immediate regularization program for all border crossers and all undocumented people already in Canada. Challenge the government with public campaigns, forums, and the media about its safe third country policy. Service organizations, join your local sanctuary or solidarity city campaign to offer services to all, regardless of status, and to never allow CBSA access. In border areas, get organized with your neighbors on both sides of the border. Put up signs showing that you support people crossing. If you see people crossing, offer them support in the way they want and do not call the RCMP or other police unless the people crossing ask you to do so. Explore areas along the border and help set up the infrastructure to support people to cross safely and freely. In Quebec, join the mobilization to oppose the racist anti-immigrant rally called by extreme right groups on the 19th of May at Roxham Road. Support mobilizations demanding that Quebec automatically issue a work permit for all who enter and for all undocumented people already in Quebec. Join the activities against the G7 summit, including the anti-borders contingent in the main march on June 7th. Join the anti-border caravan being organized by Solidarity Across Borders from the 29th of June to the 1st of July in Montreal. Offer time to groups giving frontline support to people coming across the border and make sure that those groups treat refugees arriving with human dignity and offer them the legal and daily support they need. Support mobilizations creating a solidarity city, including campaigns around access to healthcare, housing, shelter, education, food. Join efforts demanding that Mayor Plante come together on Coderre's completely unfilled promise to make Montreal a sanctuary city by ending all cooperation between the police and CVSA. Join and support mobilizing to bring undocumented community organizer and Montrealer Lucy Granados, deported on the 13th of April, back to Canada. And generally support the courageous non-status women's collective. Support mobilizing for and come out in numbers to the Open the Borders Status for All March on June 16th. In general, we call for effective, non-hierarchical, and inclusive grassroots organizing based on mutual aid and radical solidarity, using a diversity of tactics and direct action to strengthen community resistance to border controls in our cities, fight deportations and detentions, defeat the fascist movement, and actively support anti-colonial struggles and indigenous sovereignty.
La frontera nos cruzó, mis abuelos no descansan. tierra es tu guerra. No crucé la frontera. La frontera nos cruzó. Mis ancestros son regresan. Espíritu libre. Abjachala. Abjachala.
We didn't cross the borders. The borders crossed us.
Acorralado, arriesgar mi vida en lo que llamas América. Mantengo vivo nuestro espíritu nativo. Con sangre tiñes cada estrella para tu bandera. La gente que te sirve sigue siendo calavera. Si somos de color tenemos cara de ilegales. No se te olvide, gringo, tu piel blanca es de migrante. Entonces pon atención a lo que viene y detente. Abajo el muro porque América es un continente.
Yo no crucé la frontera. La frontera nos cruzó. Mis abuelos no descansan. Tierra es tu guerra. No crucé la frontera. La frontera nos cruzó. Mis ancestros son regresan. Espíritu libre.
A few weeks ago, I managed to catch up with Mara Kilmanham, an organizer with Solidarity Across Borders. She told me about the group's vision and about a couple of recent struggles against the Canadian border.
I'm a member of Solidarity Across Borders, Mara Kilmanham, and
Great. And what is Solidarity Across Borders?
Solidarity Across Borders is an organization that's been around for about 15 years. We started in early 2000, came together as a coalition of self-organized migrant groups who were fighting against their own deportations and for status for all. So we formed on that basis, and all deportations and the detention of migrants and status for all. And then we more recently added on a campaign or a demand or a call to build a solidarity city, which is the idea of a city where the borders have been pushed out of the city and the different levels of status that are caused by the immigration system and by borders are really based on solidarity and mutual aid.
And that would be the city of Montreal. Yes?
We're trying to make Montreal the city, a solidarity city. It certainly is very far from a solidarity city right now.
So tell me about your recent call to action that you put out. I believe it was called Open the Borders.
Mm-hmm. So among many different campaigns and projects and activities that we have, we've been trying to respond to the increase of people crossing irregularly from the United States into Quebec because of the Safe Safe Country Agreement. So our Open the Borders call to action was trying to provide a kind of a template for how to look at this situation and to call people to action to support people crossing, and more generally to put that in the context of a fight against borders globally and capitalism.
Great. So would you say that Canada is currently a safe haven for refugees?
Well, people coming across the border are trying to find a place where they'll have more stability, or they've decided that this is a place that they would like to try to have more stability. And so that's why we wanted to support them in that choice, and that's why we are supporting them and offering solidarity and calling for other people to do that as well. People arriving here will quickly notice that there's a huge difference between the kind of image that Canada puts out internationally and specifically the statement that the Trudeau government made around the time that Trump first started introducing anti-migrant and anti-Muslim policies. Trudeau was making a lot of political statements about how Canada would welcome refugees, but on the ground, on the terrain, when people arrive here, the fight for justice and equality as migrants does continue, which is, again, one of the reasons we put out the call to action. It's not as soon as people step across the border that they find a country right or justice.
What has changed for your group and the people you support since the Trump election?
The basic struggle has not changed. The intensity of and the room for people to express xenophobic and anti-immigrant sentiment, specifically Islamophobia and hatred, I think has increased. So the stakes seem higher and the fight seems more intense. There's been, just a huge amount of hatred and racism that can now be publicly expressed that, was more difficult to proclaim publicly. So that's part of the Trump effect, I would say. Obviously, people crossing the borders have increased by a large amount. That has always been the case that people have crossed that border irregularly. But the volume of the numbers of people coming across have increased as people become more afraid and people are put in real danger by Trump's policies. We've seen the Trudeau government not only not living up to the public promises that it made, but sort of helping in that criminalization process or that anti-migrant attitude by referring to people coming across as jumpers, another absolutely absurd designation. We've seen them as well collaborating openly with the Trump government in recent months to try to discourage people from coming to Canada and from giving visas to people so that they can't get into the state, so that they can't apply as refugees in Canada and so on.
I was going to ask you about this later, but since you brought it up, are you able to tell us about what happened yesterday at the border?
Mm-hmm. So the extreme, some extreme rightist groups, notably Stone Alliance and other groups, have called for a march on the 19th of May. Solidarity Across Borders and other allied groups like Montreal Anti-Fascist began working together with local groups such as Bridges Not Borders to call people to for an Open the Borders rally to oppose the hatred and racism of the Storm Alliance rally. They, Storm Alliance, had originally decided that they were going to call people to come to Roxham Road, which is where a large number of people do end up coming across. But because of our presence, they changed the location and went to the regular border post. We divided our rally into two parts. So there was a rally at Roxham Road, and then there was also a rally at the regular border post. The SQ, the Quebec police, prevented us from stopping the Storm Alliance from going directly in front of the temporary housing where refugees would be detained until they're deemed eligible to apply for refugee status, which is absolutely sickening. We can't know for sure that people were inside that building or whether they had been evacuated beforehand.
So, I mean, your group is saying, like, open the borders. This group is, like, build a wall. It seems fairly unlikely that those people are, that your hope is to persuade those folks with your message. What is the intention or goal in confronting far-right groups like that?
Well, I mean, many different goals. In this case, there was a goal of direct solidarity with people crossing, because they realized that was a minority frame, a strong and real, but still very small minority opinion, that there's many people who are supporting what they're doing and want to work together with them when they cross and struggle for social justice. So that was one, to send that message. A second, of course, is to send the message publicly. We did hold a press conference on Wednesday, and we spoke directly to the media about the rise of the far right and the importance of opening borders. And so we were at the same time joining that public discussion, I think, in an important way. And thirdly, in confronting racism, the slogan that's often used is "Make racists afraid again," and that is an important goal. That racists who you know, there's Canada is built on racism, on white supremacy, obviously. So it's built in systematically in Canada. And there have always been people openly expressing racist ideas. But what's happening now is open organizing. And we're trying to push that back into a place where it's too afraid to show its face, and it's completely socially unacceptable. That's another goal.
You are also openly calling for folks to sort of explore border areas, develop support infrastructure for folks who might be crossing irregularly. Some of my listeners might say, like, that's against the law. They should go through the official channels. What would you say to someone like that who's, like, living in a border zone but feels sort of, like, not – doesn't have the courage to sort of engage in that way?
Well, I mean, I think people should think back. I mean, it's a very easy analogy to draw, which people have often been drawing throughout this time, which is that border has – I mean, we can talk about that border historically as something imposed by colonial – conquerors or colonial invaders, artificially dividing land that did not belong to them. So I would invite people to take a fresh look at those borders and where they come from historically and their purpose contemporarily as well, as a tool of colonization and part of the genocide of the indigenous people. And currently the way those borders are used to restrict flows of people in a way that makes them economically vulnerable and exploitable. So those big issues about what that border is and what it represents historically and contemporarily is extremely important in deciding how to approach it. And that might take a long time reading and thinking through those issues, but it's extremely important for people to understand that. In terms of sort of an easy analogy that many people have been drawn in times is the Underground Railroad, of course, where people were escaping who had been enslaved and had managed to escape and came to Canada, where the legislation had already the slavery legislation had already changed and making it no longer legal to enslave people, or more difficult at any rate. So people need to think of laws as historical tools, perhaps, and put that in the perspective of thinking of the time of slavery and how people openly defied those laws because they, you know, either recognized that slavery was wrong or had just a feeling of compassion and justice towards other people. I mean, those are the kind of attitudes that can help you think of those actions as not something as illegal, but as something that's necessarily justified by the circumstances.
Thank you. What are some other recent campaigns or projects that your group has been working on, like more in the cities? Like, say someone's living in a city in Canada, they're not exactly sure where to start in terms mm-hmm. of supporting this work. What kinds of things mm-hmm. can you point to as examples?
Mm-hmm. So many things. What happens when people, either if they've crossed the border, if they've come in by some other means and they find their refugee status in Canada refused, Canada starts deportation proceedings against them. Many people at that point choose to defy those deportation orders and to remain in Canada without any kind of legal authorization to do so. At that point, they become extremely vulnerable, extremely exploitable, in the status, the situation, the living situation is very precarious. So, one thing we've been doing in Montreal is supporting people who find themselves in that situation and supporting them specifically to speak out and break those barrier of invisibility and claim their rights as human beings and demand dignity and respect from Canadian society. Those projects are going on in many of the major cities in Canada, so connecting with some of those, and even the smaller cities, people living in these situations as well. So whether it's writing about this, if you're a writer, or if it's speaking about it with colleagues, or if saw a student, or on your radio show. There's many different ways of talking about the specific situation of people who are undocumented in Canada, and then also the sort of tiered system where people have different immigration status, and with each different immigration status, different sets of rights, which not only keeps people, many people precarious in different ways, but it also divides people into different groups where they don't necessarily see a mutual interest. So building those links.
Do you have like an example or a story about a time that you find inspirational when people spoke up in that way?
Yeah, I mean, I can speak specifically about the situation of Lucy Granados, who was recently deported from Canada on the 13th of April. She was a member of the Non-Status Women's Collective of Montreal, a group of extremely courageous undocumented women who've been organizing together since Trudeau's election in 2015. And they've organized rallies, open rallies. They've been speaking to media. They use a white mask as their symbol, not only to protect themselves from being reported, but also because, of course, someone who's undocumented, you can, any interaction with the police can lead to detention and deportation. So they've protected their identities by wearing a white mask, which is also a symbol of how they're pushed into this situation of invisibility. So Lucy Granados was one of these, was one of the members of the Non-Status Women's Collective of Montreal, who did do a large number of media interviews and spoke publicly at a number of rallies, including the big women's rally against the Trump at the time of the Trump inauguration. She spoke in front of all of those women wearing a mask, but very courageously. But that was a solidarity rally in Montreal, and many other occasions as well. So I just find the courage that she found, despite all the extremely difficult situation that she lived in at that time. And the dangerous situation she faced if she were deported, as she has been, it's extraordinarily inspiring. So that's an example.
Do you mind talking a little bit about what happened when people in Montreal heard that Lucy was going to be deported?
Lucy was arrested on the 20th of March, and the CPSA somehow found her address. We don't know how. They burst into her home and arrested her extremely violently, and they brought her then to the detention center where she spent the rest of her time in Canada. People began mobilizing almost immediately because many of us had worked and organized with her. She was at many solidarity cross-border events. And Lucy was a very dear friend, or is a very dear friend, and as well as a comrade of many of us. She inspired us to so many actions. There was an eight-day sit-in in front of this Canadian Border Services agency organized by a number of mothers who are migrants and wanted to show their solidarity with us in that way. There were numerous pickets. There was a petition, obviously. There were letter writing. There were days of call-in, jam the lines for BC. There's a lot of art that was generated and circulated widely through social media in support of her. And then on the 13th of April, friends and supporters of Lucy did in fact go to the detention center and locked it down so that Lucy could not be deported. But that was the day that she was due to be deported. But the Canadian Border Service Agency actually brought her out the back door and cut a hole in the fence in order to go there. And so she was put on the plane even while her friends and supporters were still outside the front of the detention center, and she was deported. So it did, her specific situation, the fact she was connected to many people and the fact that she was symbolic of women who were demanding their rights and who are treated not just as second-class citizens, but as not, as non-entities, who are typically the most exploited, work long hours, get low pay, vulnerable to sexual abuse, and there's nothing you can do about it, no political rights, no civil rights. And they had broken that boundary, and she was one of the ones who had broken that boundary and was speaking out. And that's why her situation, I think, caused such an uproar, and many people mobilized against her.
So what is the long-term vision of you and of Solidarity Across Borders? How, in your most wild imaginations, if all your campaigns were successful, how do you imagine things going, say?
I mean, we're visioning for the... for the impossible. So we are, I mean, our position has been no deportations and status for all. There's many people in Canada with a variety of precarious statuses. So we're calling for, an ongoing immediate regularization program that removes, essentially removes status as an issue. Open the borders, means that those borders that are dividing people and keeping them on different levels of privilege in Canada are removed. That is Solidarity Across Borders long-term vision.
And do you think there's a difference between saying open the borders and like no borders, like abolish borders? Like, is it possible to have a border that's that porous and still have like Canada and have the United States?
Oh, interesting question. No, I don't think so. Canada is a state. But is it possible to have communal borders that are somehow responsible for people? That's an interesting question. I don't know. I think it's worth thinking about, though. I think that's really interesting. If there are somehow borders that are accountable to a community, probably not. Like, it's something that's different from, perhaps it's different from, borders as we now have them, which are state-controlled and are in no way accountable to the populations that in the communities that live within those borders.
But you don't see open the border as like a demand that the Canadian state could grant?
I mean, the Canadian state could start granting that with an ongoing regularization program. They have something that they refer to as application for permanent residence on humanitarian compassionate grounds that former minister, the former conservative minister, Chris Alexander, referred to as an ongoing regularization program, which does allow people who are undocumented to regularize, but after a long and very difficult process and uncertain as well. So that's not what we're asking for. We're calling for something that's, immediate and ongoing and meets that respects people's dignity, which the current program does not at all. And that is something that the Canadian government could actually very easily implement.
Great. If people who are listening want to learn more about Solidarity Across Borders and the work that you do, how should they do that? How can they find you?
They can look on us at our website, www.solidarityacrossborders.org. And there's a lot of information there, including how you can get involved if you're in Montreal, a lot of information about things we do. It's a pretty disorganized website, but there's a lot on there. So encourage people to have a look. We do a lot of different projects and have over the years as well. Many very inspiring projects.
You're listening to the podcast edition of From Embers, a regular anarchist radio show based out of Kingston, Ontario. Talking to Moira got me thinking a lot about Roxham Road, and about people coming in such large numbers to walk into Quebec from New York State. I spoke with Grace Bubeck, who lives near the Roxham Road crossing and is a member of Bridges Not Borders, a group of area residents who come together to welcome refugees crossing irregularly.
So can you tell me what Bridges Not Borders is and what you do?
Yeah, so Bridges Not Borders is a group that came together last year in the summer because we wanted to do something locally. There had been the first demonstration by, at that point, Lamud and Storm Alliance at Wroxham Road. And, you know, groups from Montreal came as a counter demonstration to Wroxham Road also, Solidarity Across Borders and the Antifa group from Montreal. And we found that there was not much in terms of local presence. There were a few people from the actual area, but not that many. And so we felt it would be good to get together and just do something locally as a local group. There had been an activity already that had been organized by one of the Hemingford churches. It was called the Muffin People. Basically, we went to the CBSA building in Le Col, where people waited to be processed in quotation marks by the border security agency in order to start their dossier and their file as asylum seekers. And so we went there on Saturday and Sunday mornings, basically giving them breakfast. So...
All right. Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
Welcome back to CKUT Off the Hour on 90.3 FM. You were just listening to an excerpt from a June 2018 episode of From Embers. If you want to hear the rest of it, search fromembers.libsyn.com.
My name is Brian Jefferson. And before you go, here's some news that you can use. The Montreal Fringe Festival kicked off this week with previews of this year's theater and multidisciplinary art shows. This year's Fringe Festival is a mix of virtual and in-person events. It's the 30th anniversary and runs till June 20th. You can find out more at montrealfringe.ca. And Montreal's very first Japan Week Festival begins on June the 7th. It celebrates Japanese culture through street food, pop-up shops, and virtual events. It runs downtown and in the plateau until June the 13th. A McGill student group, Meals for Milton Park, announced they'll start crowdfunding weekly to redistribute funds to Indigenous people who apply. The Settler Sundays Fund's goal this week is to raise $2,000 for local Indigenous applicants. To learn more about how you can help, please visit Meals for Milton Park on Instagram. And the Table Groupe des Femmes de Montréal is hosting a free webinar on women's safety, mobility, and public space. It's part of their Feminists for the Rights to the City series. The free panel is set for June 9th. You can find more information about it on Table Groupe des Femmes de Montréal Facebook page. And you're listening to Montreal-based artist No Cosmos. This is their track called The Post-Human Shuffle. And that concludes this Friday's edition of Off the Hour, produced by Montreal's Community News Collective. The collective includes myself, Brian Jefferson, Alice Wu, Kate Addison, Joel Salmadal, and Sarah Jesmer. For more information on anything you heard tonight, or if you would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041, extension 7000, or news intern at ckut.ca. Also, you can follow us on Instagram at Off the Hour or connect with us on Facebook. Just search for us on CKUT. Stay tuned for Cafe coming up next on 90.3 FM CKUT.
We're going to call you CKUT. You've got this frequency, 90.3. That frequency is what you're picking up when you tune that radio.
Very impressive.
You can sit on the road and look like they pick up CKUT, clear as a bell.
Fascinating. Your analysis seems logical.
CKUT is on the air.
Did you get vaccinated?
Not yet, but I will soon.
And which one are you getting?
I'm getting the dance vaccine.
The dance vaccine? Great idea.
Yeah, rehearsing with the girls is what I miss the most.
Well, it's gonna be the soccer vaccine for me. I can't wait to see the gang again.
Each vaccination brings us closer to these moments. Follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book an appointment at quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Jean Couteau, 6835 Rue Saint-Hubert, June 4th to the 8th.
You put your left hand in, you put your left hand out, you put your left hand in, and you shrink it all about. You do the Vamachara and you turn yourself around. That's what it's all about. You put your left hand in, you put your left hand out, you put your left hand in.
Presented by Undefined Radio.
Suoni per il popolo.
It's a carte.
That's what it's all about.
Jean Couteau.
Kaudi Maholi Yogurt, Elitinik Dana.